It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Well, good morning to you. It's 6 minutes past nine. It is Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2024, and we are live. Oops, there goes my microphone. We are live for another 3 hours here on the 9 to noon show, and its usual mixed bag of news, views and features. We want you involved in the conversation throughout, of course. 086 60 25,000. Share your views on what we're talking about. Raise your own concerns, your own issues. Pass on your own good news stories or acts of kindness. We're open to all kinds of communications here. If you want to send your WhatsApp voice notes, 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, as I mentioned. To give us a call, it's 07491 25,000. And if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And just to invite you, as we do every morning, and sorry to bore the regular listeners, but for those of you who don't and want to choose to watch the show, if you're at home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. We're on the X platform at Highland Radio Donegal and on YouTube. So there's no excuse, really. You can listen, you can watch, you can do whatever which way you want. Right, the newspapers this morning. Let's kick off with the Finn Valley Voice campaign launch to secure core funding for Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre. This is a subject we talked on the show about yesterday. They just need 20 grand a year of core funding to have a permanent member of staff in there to maintain the services and to grow. It's not a great ask, is it? And as I said yesterday, as we said yesterday, there's a meeting coming up with a view to, I suppose, getting the message across to local representatives, potential local representatives. The Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre and the Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre and Lifford and Castlefin Community Health Forum have joined forces to launch a campaign tomorrow, Thursday, 9th of May, to access core funding for the Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre, a key charity in Lifford that provides important community services to a broad area. It invited politicians and media representatives to attend the launch at the centre. So it's a worthwhile meeting coming up there. On to the national newspapers now, starting with the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Culture of impunity within RTE. I'm not sure how interested you are in this at this stage, but it's all over the papers. There were three reports into the broadcaster, scathing, they've been described as, 116 recommendations. 700 grand the organisation spent on golden handshakes for two senior executives. 700,000 euros, and that's a lot of licence fees to be collected in and around Letterkenny, just as one example. Reading on here, a belief that there would be no personal consequences for senior RTE officials encouraged a culture of not following specified procedures, a damning new report has found. Yesterday, the government published three independent reports on governance and culture, HR practices and accounting, which together made 116 recommendations for reform of the national broadcaster. The three reports came as RTE yesterday also confirmed that it spent €700,000 on exit packages for senior executives Rory Coveney and Richard Collins last year. The review on governance on culture found the RTE board had created insufficient accountability through a reliance on verbal reports and by tolerating challenges and, turning to page six, questions without follow-up. Forensic accountants Mazars were unable to establish the business purpose for 3 years of barter account spending between 2017 and 2019 because a hard copy folder was just during an office move or was lost during an office move. How often have we seen things lost when it's important that we get access to them? I'm thinking these kinds of dossiers, mobile phones, etc. RTE spent €700,000 on those exit packages. I thought Mr. Coveney left of his own accord. But anyway, secrecy around exit payments meant auditors were unable to determine if a pay-for-failure culture exists. RTE is a culture of poor accountability and excessive senior manager autonomy. The reports identified several instances of inadequate record-keeping and fictitious accounting transactions. Four senior RTE executives that were centrally involved in the events which prompted the reports have since retired or resigned. And the punishment for this, if that's what you might call it, and it's up to the government what they do, it's up to RTE what they do, but one can't help but note that RTE effectively is going to be punished-rewarded with reform of the licence fee. which might be compulsory license fee or whatever. 20 million euros has gone to the organisation as a bailout. Another 20 million will be going to it next year. And as I say, reform of the license, which they're going to leave to the next government, if the truth be told. Is that enough? Would you like to see more? Do you just want it to go away now? Do you not care? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and text. There's something strange going on in this country, and strange is a strange word to use in relation to it, in that it seems on a daily basis there are people that would stoop so low as to be in possession of child abuse images, and really horrendous images that, for them to be created, a child has had to go through and probably continues to go through an unimaginable situation. And people are found with these in their possession and they go to court, and it seems quite regularly they just walk away. And I don't really think that reflects what society would like to see done to these people. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about going to the absolute extremes, right? But if you are this way inclined, if you are that low of a person, this sends out a very, very strange message. A former Department of Justice official has been spared jail for possession of child abuse videos and images at his home. 39-year-old Niall Colgan was caught with indecent material on his phone when Gardaí raided his house, a court heard. The former press officer told detectives when they arrived that he had never touched any child and it was all fantasy. A model citizen, in inverted commas here, Colgan had been working from home during the COVID pandemic, experienced isolation and alcohol and cannabis, and had a part to play in his downward spiral, his defence said. Now, we all went through COVID. We all went through tough times, very tough times, some of us. I don't see how this is an excuse for this type of activity, but anyway, giving him a one-year suspended sentence at Dublin Circuit Criminal Court, Judge Martin Nolan, a name you might be familiar with, said there were no aggregating factors and it would be unjust to imprison this man. No aggravating factors for having child abuse images, and also it would be unjust to imprison him for having these images and videos. Colgan pleaded guilty to possession of two videos and two images of child sexual abuse at his home. He also admitted possession of around 300 euro of cannabis. Who cares about that? Detective Garda Alan Young told prosecutor Tessa White that Colgan's home was searched on foot of a warrant obtained by the online child exploitation unit. So Colgan was there alone at the time, and after caution said, "I've never touched any child. It's all fantasy. Photos of children were taken from Instagram and TikTok." He also said, "I take responsibility for the weed on the table." Colgan's partner returned home from work during the search. So, I mean, obviously Gardaí were concerned enough to call at this person's address, go through all the forensic investigative procedures and all that, get it to court, and then Judge Martin Nolan deemed that there were no aggravating factors that would justify imprisonment. Now, that's one case today. The reason I particularly focused on that one is because you see them every other day, it seems, and these people are free to walk. I don't know what you think, 086 60 25,000, but to some extent I'm having to bite my tongue. The Irish Times. The number of hate-based crimes and other instances reported to An Garda Síochána increased by 12% last year, with most of the incidents linked to the victim's ethnicity or nationality. Three motives, race, nationality and sexuality, have been the most commonly reported in the last 3 years. However, nationally, overtook sexual orientation to become the second most prevalent motive complained about last year. Because data around hate-based crimes and other hate-linked non-crime instances have only been published since 2021, long-term trends have yet to emerge, according to Garda sources. Now, talking to Lee there, and it's in all the papers again, hence my mentioning of it. Ireland's representative at the Eurovision Song Contest, Bambi Thug, she's made the final, or they've made the final, I beg your pardon. Bambi Thug stormed into the Eurovision final after a scintillating semi-final performance. Both me and Lee missed it because we were in bed with the boys. The Gothic non-binary artist performed. I don't understand also why someone's gender is always to the fore. Like, you wouldn't, if this was me, you wouldn't go, Greg, the heterosexual artist performed Doomsday Blue. But anyway, it's ever present in the coverage of Bambi Thug, which is, I don't understand why. I'm not saying it should or shouldn't be there. I just don't understand that there's more that defines us than that, but it's always how this person is described. The artist performed to hundreds of thousands of fans in Malmo, Sweden, last night, and was hailed as one of the top 10 acts on the night. Bambi gave it their all and secured a place in the final, but not before being put through an agonising wait as the votes from around Europe and the world, in fact, were totted up. The Cork star was chosen as the ninth of 10 semi-finalists to make it through to the final on Saturday night. Now, did you watch it? Johnny Logan was pretty good, I thought. Did you watch the show? Have you anything to say about it? Do you care? Well, our lines are there for you, 086 60 25,000. I know quite a lot of people boycotted it for a number of reasons. One, because of Israel's involvement. Less so, I think. More so because people didn't like that being Ireland's representation out there. The Irish Daily Mirror tells us that kids who faint while playing video games or exercising should be checked for underlying heart diseases, a top doctor has said. I'm reading this out in case it reaches someone that it should. The warning comes from a leading paediatric cardiologist, Professor Orla Franklin, a consultant at two major children's hospitals in Dublin. Professor Franklin warned that heart attacks do not just happen during exercise or sport, but can also occur when children are playing video games. And she said that every single parent in Ireland is right to be worried about the risk of sudden death in young people. Her warning yesterday coincided with a new study that claimed so-called couch potato kids are more likely to suffer premature heart damage. Professor Franklin, who works at Crumlin and Temple Street, issued a red flag guide to monitor children's cardiac health, such as fainting and chest pain. So whilst they're playing video games or exercising, just in case you know, you feel you need to advocate, if they're checked over and, you know, they said, no, it's all, it's fine, must have been low blood pressure or something. Well, that's a paediatric specialist there saying, look, at just get it checked out. Lastly, in the Sun, asylum seekers camping in and around 80 tents along the Grand Canal in Dublin are due to be moved on in the coming days. Authorities held a meeting on the issue last night. Last week, the Gardaí, Dublin City Council and the HSC removed a tent village from outside the International Protection Office on Mount Street. Some 285 asylum seekers were moved to the City West Accommodation Centre or to a state-run campsite at in Dublin. But in the following days, another tent village has sprung up on the banks of the canal, and the local residents and businesses are experiencing concerns or expressing concerns about the camp. So a multi-agency meeting of Gardaí, council officials and immigration officials were due to be held last night to discuss the problem. But where do they move them? Because as they move that group of individuals, another group of individuals will arrive seeking accommodation. And on it goes, a 95% increase in asylum seekers to Ireland, 95% increase as to what we'd ordinarily expect. Okay, that was a run through the newspapers. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this break. Now, Minister Charlie McConnellogue has announced a decision to ban the use of remotely controlled electric shock collars. The Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine announced his decision to move to ban the use of the use on dogs and cats of electronic shock collars operated by handheld remote controls. Minister McConnellogue not available, as you know. Kathleen Murray is a dog behaviour therapist, though, and is kind enough to join us. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so how can you talk to us about these collars and how widely they're used?
Yeah, well, they're surprisingly, shockingly, actually, widely used, and mostly by people who have problems with their dogs, maybe simple problems, and they end up getting these collars thinking that they're the answer to everything, and they actually cause more problems with that often than is necessary. So, I mean, when you think of a dog-handler relationship, it's meant to be like a partnership based on trust and cooperation. So as soon as you put one of these collars on a dog, all trust and cooperation goes out the window. At that stage then, it's more like you have to ask yourself, is it a power trip on your behalf? Because it becomes a one-way street instead of a two-way street. And the dog is really operating out of fear after that, rather than respect or cooperation, because they have no choice in the matter. And dogs often respond really badly to the collars because they can become well, obviously fearful and incredibly anxious. They can even become aggressive as a result of these collars. So, you know, there's an awful lot to think about, really. It's actually, in my view, it's a lazy man's way of training, or else you have too many dogs to control. And why do you have too many dogs? Is it because of money? Are you selling the dogs? Is it an ego power trip, maybe? Prestige with your friends? I don't know. But, you know, you have to look at all of these things and see why exactly, you know, you're having to use the collar in the first place.
So you're saying it's better to have a relationship and training based on respect, reward, rather than sort of like a master-slave relationship based on fear and punishment?
Yeah, exactly. And when you use the collar, you automatically diminish an awful lot of what the dog can actually give you voluntarily. You're ruling out an awful lot of things that the dog has to offer. Because, say, for example, a working sheepdog, they can read the sheep so well. If you're using a collar, they have to go by what you say, whereas a sheepdog can actually see things with their own intelligence way ahead of what you can see. And sometimes that's the reason that sometimes that the control is needed or used, is because the sheepdog is way ahead of the person. They're too fast for the person sometimes, so the person needs to slow them up because, you know, so if you have an intelligent dog, it will operate under its own intelligence. And that intelligence can actually be to its detriment if the owner isn't on the same level as the dog. You know, and that's where there's a deficit. And that's where often the handler uses this remote control then to get the dog to do what they want at their pace rather than the dog working on their own steam and things, you know.
A funny wee quirk of this announcement
is... it's very sad to see a dog.
Yeah, a funny wee quirk of this announcement, though, is that the minister says he's considered representations that he's received from dog owners that use these collars, and they will be able to... they'll be able to register the dog's identity with the Department of Agriculture and continue to use shock collars on the dogs. That's a bit peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah,
I don't know how big that lobby group is, but I mean, to make special provisions so that dog owners who want to use them can still continue to use them if they currently do, it's quirky, isn't it? If that's the right word.
Well, that sounds to me like money. That sounds to me like money driven automatically. Yeah, I was really surprised to read that, and also shocked to see that you can still keep using them for a deaf dog. I mean, why would you put it on a deaf dog? The dog is already deaf. He's already shocked by everything that's happening around him because things suddenly appear into his vision that he hasn't heard coming. And now you put a shock collar on him. You know, why not just put a lead on the dog so that he can't get into difficulties and go out along with your dog, you know, and enjoy the time with him and teach him some hand signals, which is his own body language anyway, which he knows better than anything. Rather than, because dogs read our bodies and look at what we do rather than listen to what we say. So, you know, you're diminishing the dog's intelligence by doing these things to the dog. You really are doing a disservice to dogs. And I have seen the after effects of a lot of this with shock collars and even the collars that they use for, you know, round houses with fencing. I've seen dogs, you know, become nervous wrecks there. I've seen them walk out through them. I've seen them, you know, be afraid to go out their own front door, you know, and I've seen people using the remote controls and they use them aggressively. They're putting their finger on it because they can't hear it and they can't feel it. So they think that the dog doesn't because they don't automatically react straight away. And maybe the dog is paralyzed in fear because they're thinking, what just happened to me? I don't know where that came from. And, you know, the person keeps pressing and keeps pressing, you know, so it's continuously shocking the dog and things. And that's like human problem, because that's a human lack of intelligence there rather than, you know, working with it. So a lot of the wrong people are using these collars. I wouldn't advertise them for anybody, but a lot of, I mean, professional trainers don't need to use them unless they're working with a lot of dogs, and that's usually money driven. They're usually selling these dogs and they want to sell a trained dog. So that's not about a partnership between a dog and a person. That's long gone in these relationships.
The language is quite specific. He's banned the use of remotely controlled electronic shock collars. So the collars that are activated by crossing a boundary, it seems that they aren't included in this. What's your views on that?
Yeah, well, you see, again, they don't work for all dogs. I think that, you know, if you get a dog and you consider yourself to be a responsible dog owner, then you need to have a way of keeping the dog on your property that's foolproof, that's 100% proof. And these collars are, these lines going around the gardens are not 100% foolproof. And the dogs they work best on are actually sensitive, nervous dogs who are so scared of crossing that line. That's not how you want to control a dog. You know, you don't want a dog terrified and picking at steps when it goes outside, you know, because they can accidentally, in the heat of the moment, see a cat or something and want to chase it. And then they get the zap, you know, and then they're on the outside of it. And then when they cool off and they finish chasing and they're going to come back, they know they're going to get the zap coming back in. So they don't want to cross the line and come back in. So now you have a dog on the outside of it that's free to go wherever it wants. You know, and if you're thinking in the you know, about livestock on the countryside and things like that, you know, put your dog on a lead. Learn how to control your dog from an early age. You know, bring your dog up properly. Would you put a shock collar on your child when you're teaching them how to do things if they get it wrong? You know, you have to think logically.
What's the difference between one of these shock collars and anti-bark collars? Because anti-bark collars also are not being banned. So,
yeah, anti-bark collars come in different kinds of devices. Some of them put a puff of citronella up the dog's nose whenever they bark. Other ones, you know, vibrate. Other ones, there's lots of different variations of all these things coming out all the time for commercial use. Obviously, people are making money out of them. And gullible people are buying them thinking this is the answer to the problem. But if you've got a dog that's sitting at home while you're at work for 8 hours and it's afraid to bark, maybe the dog is injured, maybe the dog sees an intruder outside, maybe the dog, there's a lot of reasons why a dog barks. A dog barks to let you know that there's a problem. Either somebody is coming to the house and you should acknowledge it and say, yeah, I see that, thanks, now you can stop barking. Teach your dog. It's about teaching. It's about cooperation. You know, it's about trust, getting the dog to know what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. And dogs that are well-trained, dogs that are happy with their owners, don't bark all day at home. You know, dogs that are lonely, dogs that don't get enough exercise, dogs that are out in yards by themselves that have nothing else to do except bark at the birds, these are the dogs that bark all day long. And now you're putting an added thing onto them, an added stress on top of the loneliness and the stress by putting one of these collars on them.
Yeah, well, just to be clear, the only thing really at this point being banned is the use of remotely controlled electronic shock collars. What isn't being banned are the anti-barking measures or collars that provide a shock if they cross a boundary, for an example. So they are still legal, and you can continue to use your shock collar via remote if you want to, because Minister McConlogue says he's listened to those people and wants to for this to be balanced. That being said, it is an effectual ban, albeit not immediately on these completely, right? Because obviously dogs don't live forever, and that permit will expire with the dog, sadly. So this is an all-right ban into the future, an all-out ban, Kathleen.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm happy to hear that, really, because, you know, I've worked with a lot of dogs over the years, and I have never had to actually use a collar on a dog because the dog doesn't need that. Even the worst behaved dogs, I mean, I have taken on dogs that have been like on death row, you could say, you know, really aggressive dogs. And they've turned out to be the most misunderstood, gentle, sweet dogs ever. Some dogs, their trauma lasts a bit longer. Some dogs, you can deal with it, you know, some a couple of months, some a couple of years. It's about working with the dog. It's about building up that trust and cooperation. You'll get a lot out of your dog if you do that. But sometimes, as I say, people have too many dogs, you know. They don't have the time to put into them. They don't have the energy to put into them. They want the dogs to be like model dogs all the time. A dog is a loving being. It has instincts. It needs exercise. It needs mental stimulation. If you're not getting that and you don't have time to give that to your dog, then putting a collar on your dog is a complete, absolute disservice to your dog. It's a horror show for your dog, to be honest. And it diminishes your dog's respect and trust. It kills all trust between you and the dog.
Caller says, I have a boundary controlled collar on our dog to protect him from traffic and sheep in a field beside us. He has a massive yard to play in and has been shocked just once and has never done it again. It was down low and he learned quickly.
Yeah, he got shocked. Yeah. He got scared. He's scared. Your dog's afraid. Yeah.
Okay, another caller says, what about electric boundaries for cattle and sheep? If it works for them, then why not for dogs?
Yeah, why that as well? Why not just put up a fence that keeps them in? You know, there's a responsibility that goes with keeping animals, you know.
Another caller says Greg
put a
will
bit
see
of money into it.
Yeah, caller says Greg will see a lot more attacks on sheep in this county if these collars are banned outright. used responsibly. These collars are on a par with an electric fence used on farm animals. Now, just to be clear, and I'm trying to be very clear here, your boundary shocker is legal, right? I've never seen one of these remote-controlled shockers. It's only they that are being banned. But that being said, you know, you should be walking your dog on a lead if you're walking in the countryside. You should be in control of that dog all the time. It shouldn't require, should it, Kathleen, an electric shock? I think if you're walking
well,
in an area
where...
Well,
why would a dog on a lead require... Yeah.
No, but it should be on a lead, yeah. So I don't see how it can... Anyway, yeah. That lady speaking about the dog collars is absolutely correct. These collars are... these collars for training or boundaries are a form of cruelty, simple as that. Another caller says, no such thing as a bad dog, just a bad owner. And that's really the thrust of the adverts that are running at the moment from the Department of Agriculture, isn't it, in relation to preventing sheep kills. They're saying it's not the dog that's bad, it's the owner that's bad. Another caller says, Kathleen, yeah. As someone who's afraid of dogs, I do like to see them on dogs because I know they're not going to pass the wire on the gate. I mean,
that's not true. They will pass the wire on the gate. I've seen them do it.
I have two dogs.
They just need the right motivation.
Oh, yeah, true enough. I have two dogs and I agree with that lady. Would never put a shock collar on them, have leads for them and walk them every day. I don't have a... If you don't have a dog, you have shock collars on them. Sorry, if you don't... Okay. Anyway, they don't use them. Another, I think Charlie McConnell should worry more about the calves that are being transported inhumanely across the EU of collars for my dog to keep them safe and not get them killed along the road. Well, I mean...
Yeah, well,
we always,
you
I
know,
think
that's
I try, and, pre, I try yeah. and pretend the transport of animals doesn't really happen because I don't think anyone would really be too pushed on that happening either. Another caller says, we know very little about dogs when we first got him and spent months training him right from wrong. He's now six. We walk him every day. We leave him on the step and he waits. He's well trained. You do not need to give your dog attention. You do need to give your dog care and attention to train them, which is what you've said from the beginning, Kathleen. You don't. You want respect, yes. Mutual respect, love and reward rather than fear, punishment, master-servant yeah. type relationship.
That's right. Yeah, you just need a bit of cooperation. And you, when you teach your children as they grow not to murder people and not to steal things and all the lessons they have to learn because their instincts are no different from any other young thing growing up, they don't know right from wrong. You have to teach them. So, I mean, you don't put a shock collar on them to teach them, you know. You guide them, you put time and effort into them. Days, of course, you could think, oh, my God, like, why did I even have them? But, you know, everybody gets that as a parent, and the same with dogs. But you have to put that time into them. You have to put that energy into them. But first of all, you need to know what you're doing. Because if you don't know what you're doing and you're just taking the easy way out, then you're doing a disservice to your dog.
All right, Kathleen, listen, as always, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Kathleen. Take care of yourself. Now, just to be absolutely clear, because sometimes it gets mixed up in the conversation, that's often my fault. What's being banned is collars whereby you have a remote control and you press a button and it gives the dog a shock. What's not being banned are anti-barking measures, and what is not being banned is the boundaries where the dog crosses a boundary or attempts to and gets a shock. They're not being banned. It's only these remote control shockers. If you currently use them, you can continue to use them if you wish. You just can't begin to use them. A caller says, Greg, I noticed this morning the election posters are up. Do we really need our towns and countryside cluttered by these posters? I'd be interested to know, do they really persuade someone on how to vote? I personally prefer to vote for people who think more of our towns and don't destroy them with this clutter. There have been studies which point out, particularly for new candidates, that they are effective. But that's a study for everything, isn't there? As we said at the top of the show, anti-immigrant, anti-nationality and anti-race sentiments have for the first time become the most prevalent motive for hate crimes. This according to new Garda figures. Chief Superintendent Pádraig Jones joins us on the programme now. Thank you very much for joining us. I do appreciate your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Right, so there was a 12% increase in hate crimes generally reported to Garda in 2023. What's the numbers behind that percentage?
So the numbers behind the percentage, Greg, are for in total the number of hate incidents for 2023 were 651. And they can be broken down into two categories. So hate crime, of which there were 548 incidents, and then hate-related incidents, which are non-crime incidents, which were 103. So that gives you a total of 651. And as you said, an increase of 12% over the figures in 2022. I suppose it indicates, you know, an increase in the reporting of the crime, an increase, we hope, in the trust in an Garda Síochána to report the crime to us, in the expectation that we will deal with it professionally and investigate it where appropriate.
Yeah, and we haven't been really collating these figures for very long at all. So can we attribute it to an actual increase in these types of crime, or, as you say, an increase in detection? Because, you know, we on this programme, and I'm sure many programmes around the country, have done stories saying that, you know, this stuff is a crime. Gardaí encouraging people to report it. You know, can we separate an increase in activity or an increase in reporting?
Well, you're right, Greg. So going back to 2021 is our baseline for the recording of the figures in relation to hate crime. So as you've quite rightly said, this is relatively new departure for us. And we are heartened that in one sense there's been a year-on-year increase in the number of reports to us. So that tells us two things. One, that there is hate crime out there. And secondly, also, that there is a level of trust and a growing level of trust in an Garda Síochána to investigate it. However, we are aware, and we work closely with civil society and non-governmental organisations, and we are aware that hate crime is traditionally very much underreported. So we believe there is more work for us to do there, and that's probably part of the message I'd like to get out today to your listeners, is to make sure that they report to us, because if it's not reported to us, we can't act on it.
Just reading most of the reports in the papers this morning, they say Gardaí believe this reflects a growing anti-migrant and anti-immigrant sentiment in the country. Is that your view? Is that the official Gardaí view, or is that an interpretation from the press?
No, well, I think the figures and the statistics are quite clear. So when we look at the incident types, so what incident types are we talking about when we speak about the ones that have hate crime involved in them? And the top three are public order, assault, and criminal damage. Now, certainly in previous years, criminal damage didn't feature, and there has been a number of criminal damage incidents, both by arson and not arson. So there's a differentiation that we have there in terms of our crime counting figures. And then in terms of the motives that are attached to that, so they're the incidents and the motives. Certainly last year, the primary motive was anti-race in 36% of cases, anti-nationality in 18%, and then the third one is anti-sexual orientation, which is 16%.
And of course, disregard this if it's an unfair question or wide of the mark. But if I were arrested at an anti-immigration march for public order offences, what would be the criteria for listing that as an anti-migrant public order offence? Would that match that criteria, would you say?
Well, I suppose it's each case on its merits, Greg, is what I would say. So in terms of these are hate crimes, and I suppose it's important to point that out. So there's a predicate of offence of criminal nature. So if it's a public order offence, well, then it's a public order offence, and it's then added to by one of the hate indicators. And as you're probably aware, the motives for hate are reflective of what we call the nine protected grounds that are in legislation. So an example is sexual orientation, your ethnicity, your nationality, or even perhaps disability. So they are the markers. But it's very important as well, I think, to point out that we do observe and acknowledge the right of people to engage in peaceful protest.
No, I do understand that.
Certainly it's not. Yeah, and it's not the remit of ourselves to engage in any way that would try and prevent that.
Most hate crime took place in Dublin, almost half, 44%. That was followed by the North West at 21%, from where I'm speaking to you from, which might come as a surprise to some. How do Gardaí react, or what needs to be done from the force to sort of recognise that, you know, there might be, you know, a particular sentiment in the Northwest, for an example?
Yes, so yeah, 21% of the incidents last year were recorded in the Northwestern region. And maybe just to put that in context, the Northwestern region, from the Garda policing perspective, is quite a vast region geographically. It goes from Donegal all along the border over to Louth, and it captures Galway, Roscommon, Longford and Mayo. So it, geographically, it's a very large region. But certainly, to speak to your point about what we need to do, certainly we are not complacent. And while we welcome the trust that the public have put on us and victims have put in us to report those crimes, we have delivered hate crime training across the entire Garda organisation. So that's to over 17,000 personnel. Since that, then, we have engaged with a third level university, and we've an accredited policing and human rights course, which we're delivering to members of our personnel. And to date, we're at over 3,000 people have undertaken that in the organisation. And then we need to double down on that again. We will deliver cultural awareness training throughout the course of 2024 to our colleagues within an Garda Síochána. So certainly there's no complacency on our behalf. We're very much alert to the impact that this type of crime can have, and very often life-altering impacts on victims. And I think as a society, we have to try and continue to reject hate and discrimination. And obviously our mission is to keep people safe. So everyone has a right to live safely, and it's our job to try and ensure that that happens.
Do you believe that Gardaí need new laws, or do you think the Gardaí need the laws looked at in this area to enforce it and to ensure that, you know, everyone has can continue with their right to live safely without being targeted because of the protected characteristics? Like, is there enough there at the moment, or would you welcome as a force, if you can speak in that capacity, more teeth?
Well, certainly there has been much talk of legislation, but I would go back to the process that we've initiated in the Garda Síochána since 2021. And that process seems to have worked very well in terms of creating awareness in the first instance about hate crime and hate incidents. And I think it's testament that there have been year-on-year increases in the reports to us that we have the ability and the capacity to deal with these incidents. And as I said to you, if it's a criminal matter, it will be investigated as such. We will deal with it professionally and provide our support to victims in any way we can to ensure that that comes to a natural end.
Chief Superintendent Pádraig Jones, thank you very much for your time this morning. A caller says, if that man had not been a member of the Department of Justice, would he have walked away free? I doubt it. Well, unfortunately, people of all different... should I say unfortunately? That's my view, and perhaps I shouldn't express it, but there's lots of people from different backgrounds that seem to get the same treatment. I think to sort of suggest it's because of previous employment kind of would be a smokescreen, and it doesn't tell the full story. A caller says, we're hearing a lot about certain judges who appear to be letting child abusers off with light sentences, and in many cases the sentence is suspended. Just because they are judges, they should not, they shouldn't be questioned. If anyone's going to stand up and review and question his sentences, where is the law society? Okay. Let me see. It's natural that with an increase in non-nationals, well, they're not non-nationals, they're non-Irish nationals, non-Irish nationals. It's natural that with an increase in non-Irish nationals that there would be an increase in incidents in Donegal. Despite its high figure, has mostly remained a welcome county. I agree with you in that regard. Have the guards charged anyone with a hate crime against a disabled person in Ireland? Is there a diversity officer in Donegal? Well, let me have a look at those figures and I'll see. They are publicly available. I just didn't dig that deep into them because they were only published this morning. Now, on to the Eurovision. Lots of you texting in on this, and one person didn't really hear my comments properly, I don't think, but that's good, but I'm going to read the text. The Eurovision Song Contest used to be a family event. If Greg thinks Bambi Thug is family viewing, we're all in bother, and it's on before the watershed. Well, you see, I don't think it's family viewing, and I said that to Lee, in that it's no longer family viewing. I wouldn't sit with, I was going to say, my children, two of them are over 18. They can do whatever the hell they like, I suppose. I don't have much saying that. That sounds terrible. It's not quite like that, but you know what I mean. But no, I wouldn't sit with a younger person watching. It's unfortunate that it has become what it has, but it is what it is. This is what it is now. It's a celebration of diversity and flamboyance and culture and to be whoever you want to be. And for some, it's a complete switch off, and maybe it's winning over a brand new audience. I don't know. Greg, never mind Bambi's song. What about Ollie Alexander's UK performance? It was like a sex show. Shocking. Didn't see that either. I was doing daddy duties, so I missed that also. There was, later on, there was a woman in an outfit that left very little to the imagination. I did see that. Hi, Greg. I have to say I'm totally with Lee on his opinion on the Eurovision. I didn't watch it last night, and for the first time in my life, found myself hoping that Ireland would win through to the final. It's a sad reflection on our country if that's the best effort we can send to Europe to represent us. I'd say they found themselves hoping that Ireland wouldn't win through, but it's missing the NT. I'm guessing. If I'm wrong, please correct me. I don't think it reflects us, you see, either. I don't, like, if you watch the... when I watched the Portugal entrance or the Icelandic entrance, I mean, there was a guy at one point running around pretending he had no shorts on, and then he was blasting flames from his crotch. I don't think that's representative of the country that he was representing, if that makes sense. But I take your point. I'm not a defendant of it, really. I think at this point it's an adult show and adults can watch whatever they want, as far as I'm concerned, within, you know, with the obvious boundaries. Just shows what way the West has turned. Absolutely no values anymore. Anyone who practices witchcraft, blood sacrifices and promotes non-binary, etc. should not be representing any country. Also waving a trans flag instead of a tricolour. Yeah, there was one trans flag and two tricolours being raised, waved there. Caroline, I don't think I have time for that call before 10. We'll go to the after 10 if that's okay. Morning, I wouldn't watch that Eurovision, swear word. What a joke it is with countries that seemingly can't look at one another on the world stage. It's a joke. And as for that Bambi thug, they or them or whatever, disgraceful, pushing their all wokeness. But again, if you're anti-woke, you know, to use that phraseology, don't watch the Eurovision. And I would argue that if you were sort of anti-woke, in all it encompasses now, you probably wouldn't have wanted to watch the Eurovision for quite some time. Is it representative of the West? No, I don't think so. But again, I don't want to come across as an apologist, because I don't really, not really bothered that much, if that makes sense. You hear the description of all LGBTQ sexuality on anything and everything to get everyone, especially the younger generation, used to using these words to normalise it. Well, you'll see a lot of that on the walls of schools too. I don't think it has to be on the Eurovision. I think sometimes parents and guardians that are concerned about this stuff really, on lots of different social issues, maybe often aren't actually inside some of the schools where at certain times of the year or all year round, there's a lot of conversation about that type of stuff. Back to dogs here. I had a lot of dogs over the years. I never had a shock collar on them. You have to build a relationship with them. You have to stimulate your dog. You wouldn't put a shock collar on a child, so why not a dog? Again, comparing dogs and children feels a bit weird to me, but I take the wider point. But the problem is, as you see, people don't have time, and they have a dog that requires time, and they don't have the time, and they take the path of least resistance for the human, which is the shock collar, isn't it? And not all the time that that person was able to dedicate to their pet. And unfortunately, that's a pattern. People buy puppies and end up with big dogs. Fines have increased now. The dog warden can issue an on-the-spot fine for an unlicensed, uncontrolled dog. €450. There'll be more demand for these collars now. That depends on the levels of enforcement too, but I take your point. There's a lot of dogs that need more than an electric collar, says a listener. I think I know what they're talking about. That lady's so right. You need to have time to spend with your dog. They're like people. They need company. Would never, ever put one of these collars on my dog. Thank you, Greg. Thank you for your text. Greatly appreciate it. Another caller says, what would help with sheep killing in a safe environment to walk dogs would be a dog park. Why is there not one in Letterkenny at the very least? It would help with so many issues that dog and owners are experiencing. And, you know, I get where you're coming from here, because between the beaches and all the talk of controlling dogs and what have you, you know, it's almost, you'd be, where do you take your dog if you have one? Dolores on Facebook, Greg, I haven't watched the Eurovision for years. Gone are the days of Johnny Logan. Disgraceful show now. Well, Johnny Logan was on last night, so you'd have missed him singing Euphoria. Good morning, Greg, and all at Highland Radio. Thank you very much, Rosemary. Pedro is watching us live and clear from Indianapolis in Tenaso. Thank you very much for that. Good morning, Beth. Just popped up there. And also, Rosita wants us to wish James Byrne Muckross a very happy birthday today. Happy birthday to you, James. We do appreciate your contact. Okay, it is the 9 till noon show. That's the first hour in the bag. We'll be back with more on the programme. Loads of news, conversation and features. But we're going to take a break now for the news and obituary notices. Chat to you really soon.